So first of all, it's very wonderful to see everyone. And I hope that everyone and everyone around you are well. And with the help of Hashem, we should face this challenge, this worldwide challenge. And by us meeting together in this way and studying something spiritual together, that is a way to connect to the essence of the universe and transform the whole of existence in the way that it is waiting to be transformed, to be healed. Because the universe, quite apart from the coronavirus, the universe is ill because its inner soul does not reveal itself. And so therefore the world and the way that many people live is in chaos. And we're seeing a particular example of that chaos now. But when Mashiach comes, then the inner dimension of existence, the holiness, the spirituality, which is its core, will be revealed. So it's just like a person who is ill and they're lying in bed and they can't express themselves. They can't speak. They can't communicate what they want to communicate, or only in a muddled way. So we want that everyone should be well and the universe should be well, which means that the godliness within the universe will be revealed. So our study today of a spiritual discourse helps us on that path. Now, the opening words of the discourse, the key words which open up the window of this discourse, are from the Song of Songs. So just to see that in context, it's Song of Songs, chapter 4. Hinach yafa rayati. Hinach yafa. Right, actually, if people are able to mute their phones, then it makes it easy, I think, for any one of us to be heard. So when you want to speak, open your phone and then speak. Alan, that's so wonderful to see you. Alan, hi. Alan Bennett. Take care, Alan. Hi. Now, so there we are. This is the beginning of Song of Songs, of chapter 4 of Song of Songs. Hinach yafa rayati, behold, you are beautiful, my beloved. You are beautiful, your eyes are like doves. Now, here we have a man speaking to a woman, telling her how beautiful she is. And the key words that we are looking at are here. Gan na'ul achotik chala, a locked garden is my sister, my bride. Gal na'ul, a fountain locked. Mayan chatum, a sealed up spring. Very beautiful words expressing the modesty, the maidenly modesty of this bride. Now, Shir HaShirim, Song of Songs, is understood by the sages as a poem or a beautiful teaching of the relationship of God and the Jewish people. And this discourse, which was said on Shabbat Tazria Metzora, the same Sedra as this week, this was said in 1987. Now, Tazria Metzora, Tazria begins with a woman having a baby, and the relationship between the husband and wife is the way that I understand the way that this theme of God and the Jewish people expressed in this in this verse about the locked garden and the locked fountain, the sealed up spring. How that relates to this discourse. Now, this discourse was edited by the Rebbe in 1990, and is a very remarkable and beautiful discourse. Now, I want to try to share with you the Maimonigen, if I'm able to do that. One second. Can you see that? Can you hear the Maimon melody?
Yep.
Yes?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Better than me singing. Right. Okay. Now let's try to find the actual Maimer. So that's what I'm looking for now. And where is it? Just 1 second. Gosh. Sorry. I had it up a minute ago. Sorry about this delay. Sorry. Ah, is this it? No. Sorry, I'm all confused. I don't understand why I can't find it. I'm just sorry. Can't understand why. No. Sorry about this. Right. Can you see that? Can you see the Maimer? Okay, wonderful. For some reason, it came up with the wrong title. Right, okay. So we are now going to try to learn this Maimer, this beautiful discourse. So we began off, Gan Na'ul Achoti Kala. My bride, my sister, my bride, you are a locked garden. Gal Na'ul, a locked fountain, Mayan Chatum, a sealed spring. Now, the Rebbe Maharash is the fourth Lubavitcher Rebbe, Reb Shmuel. And one of the things about the teachings of our Rebbe is that they build on the teachings of the six Rebbeim before him. He's the seventh Rebbe, and his teachings build on the teachings of those before him. So here he is focusing particularly on a discourse by Reb Shmuel, the fourth Rebbe, in a series of discourses of 1880, right? So that's near the end of the Rebbe, the lifetime of the Rebbe Maharash. There's a long chain of discourses which begin with a discourse about Pesach. And so for this Sedra, Tazria Metzora, which begins off with the idea of a woman having a baby, and as I understand it, that's the logic of focusing on this verse at this particular point. Reb Shmuel Lu, do you have any other comment why it should be this Dibur HaMaschil, this theme to the Maimer?
No, I never. It's a very interesting point that you mentioned now, and I've learned this Maimer a few times, and I always thought it had to do with Sfira, Lagvema, Shavuos, you know, Danoil, Avoida. But what you're saying is an interesting point.
All right. In other words,
the general theme of Sfira and the Shavuos. But what you're saying, it makes a lot of sense. Kutashel Inyan.
Yes, you see, this discourse is about the way we wrap ourselves up with God. And we wrap ourselves up with God, we connect with God through mitzvot and through Torah study. And Torah study is the deepest, most intimate aspect of our relationship with the divine. And the mitzvot are the more general, outer level. So it certainly relates to the idea that we came out of Egypt at Pesach, and now we're counting the Omer, and then we come through to Shavuot, to the giving of the Torah, which is the conclusion of this relationship with the divine. It's like the marriage of the Jewish people with God. So even without the Sedra Tazria, this would fit in perfectly, but just my suggestion that it also echoes the Sedra, the idea of the husband and wife having a baby, the unity of husband and wife.
So, interesting.
Sorry?
Yes, I say, yeah, nice.
Now, and the Rebbe Maharash, whose actual birthday is on the 2nd of Iyar, that's going to be on Sunday, this coming Sunday. So the Rebbe Maharash, he brings in his discourse of this parsha, Tazria Metzora, in a stream of discourses called Matzah Zu of 1880. So he quotes from the Targum, from Targum Yonatan, who wrote an Aramaic translation of the Tanakh, only his translation is more of a midrash. It's an expansive commentary. The Aramaic translation, Targum Onkelos, of the Torah is very, very straight and keeps very close to the text. But Targum Yonatan often expands. And so the way he expands here is he says, the Kemoshe Gan Eden Hu Na'ul, the same way that the Garden of Eden, Gan Eden, is locked, the Yev Shali Kanesbo, and it's impossible to enter it. Ki im, sorry, I have forgotten to start recording, and so I'm going to, I always do this. Let me just see if I can start recording. I'm very sorry. Oh, maybe it is recording. Sorry, gosh, confused. Now I'm going to have a problem finding this thing again. Here we are. We are recording. Okay, so all we've lost is our little pen, and so here we've got it back. Now, so this is Targum Yonason's explanation. That he says that the same way that Gan Eden, the Garden of Eden, is locked, and the only souls that can get into the Garden of Eden are the souls of the tzaddikim, Kein Yisrael ogdim pitchehem lebaalam Zeh HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Jewish people are locked, as it were, and reserved for their husband. A faithful wife is locked as regards any other man, God forbid, and she is focused on her husband, and the Jewish people are locked, like the Garden of Eden is locked, for anyone else, only HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One. So it explains in the discourse, now having quoted that explanation of Targum Yonatan, of the Aramaic translation by Jonathan, it explains in the discourse that the word gan, garden, means ta'anug, means delight. And the idea of a locked garden, a locked delight, husheina ta'anug rak be'elokut, is that the person only feels delight in godliness. The imcha lo chafatzti, the person doesn't want anything apart from the divine. Chefetz is desire. And it's like saying, the only desire I have is you, is godliness. Now, that sounds extremely ascetic. And one would add that in Jewish life, the mitzvot of the Torah pervade our lives so as to make our physical lives into an expression of something holy. But it is the holiness that we are seeking within the physicality of our lives, enhanced and blessed and focused by the Torah and the mitzvot of the Torah. And then the Rebbe points out that in the discourse before this one, by the Rebbe Maharash, he also explains this same verse. And there he explains that Gan Na'ul means Sur Mera. The locked garden means turning away from evil. And the idea of turning away from evil is mainly in practical action. And the special thing about this discourse, as explained by the Targum, is that in this case, it's not only turning away from negative things in practical action, it's also that one's delight is only in godliness. So delight is something within the person's feeling, within the person's soul, within the person's emotions. That too is something focused on the divine. So there's the way that the actions of a person are focused on the divine in the sense of not doing anything that is forbidden by the Torah, but also the inner and deep desire of the person is the divine. Now, the Rebbe comments that there's another commentary on the Tanakh when we look at a page of the Song of Songs and any other part of Tanakh. There's the Targum and there is Rashi and various other commentators, and one of them is Metzudat David. Now, Metzudat David, on this verse, he explains that the Jewish people are like a gan na'ul, like a locked garden, that no one can come in to that garden, ki im ba'al hagan, except for the owner of the garden. Now, this, so which fits the idea very well. The owner of the garden is God, and the Jewish people are like the locked garden, and only the owner of the garden can come into the garden. But the Rebbe asks a question. We have to understand the fact that the garden, now you see we're reading back the two commentaries into each other. The idea that the garden means delight. Now that also applies to an ordinary garden. And if so, this image of the locked garden, we can understand that the Jewish people are holding themselves back, that their delight should only be in godliness. What is added with the understanding of this concept through the idea that saying that the locked garden is Gan Eden? In other words, the Garden of Eden. In other words, why do we need the extra dimension of what Targum Yonatan said? What the Metzudat David said, that it's a garden, it's a locked garden, it belongs to a certain owner. We, the Jewish people, are like that garden. The owner is God, and so we only open up to God. So the question is, what does Targum Yonatan add to our understanding by saying not just that it's a garden, but that it's the Garden of Eden? And especially at first sight, you would say that if you just say it's an ordinary garden, it fits better with the image. There's the owner of the garden and the garden itself, and the owner and the goes into the garden, that's us and the divine. So since the locked garden of the metaphor is the locked garden in what we're trying to explain. There's a wonderful word in Hebrew which I've never found an English equivalent, the nimshal. There is the mashal, which is the metaphor, the parable, and the nimshal is what the parable is actually about. Maybe Eve would know a good English word from the 18th century, which defines this concept. So since what we are really talking about, did you say? So since the nimshal is the delight of the person, the delight of the Jewish people, which refuses to enjoy the delights of the world. Yes, are we going to be delighted by the latest kind of iPhone? It's so amazing whenever the phone companies prepare to launch a new phone, and then gradually gets revealed. I see it in the underground stations, the big adverts, and they're trying to whet everyone's appetite. is one going to be drawn into that? According to this discourse, we're a locked garden. We're not going to enjoy the iPhone. We might use the iPhone, but our enjoyment is reserved for the divine. So it would seem that a regular garden, yes, this is the point he made before, the regular garden fits better in terms of the parable and what we're talking about, what the parable represents. Why do we have to have the extra concept of the Garden of Eden, which right by its very nature is not just a garden, but is delight in the divine? All right. So in other words, he's really comparing two discourses by Reb Shmuel, the discourse of the week before and this discourse, which take different commentaries on the same verse, this same verse. And we have here the idea, the way in which a verse in Tanakh, a verse in the Bible, it's like a door which opens, and there are corridors and passages going in different directions. And the Rebbe is leading us by the hand and showing us the contrast between this direction from that direction. Now, and this will be understood from what it says in the discourse. The Gan Na'ul, the locked garden, hu ki'inyana kiddushin. That is like betrothal. There are two stages in marriage, and particularly the halachic dimension of Jewish marriage. There's kiddushin, betrothal, like the moment when the groom puts the ring on the bride's finger under the chuppah. At that moment, she's betrothed to him, but not yet actually married to him. And then the continuation of the marriage ceremony with the seven blessings under the chuppah, and then being in the yichud room together, which the crowd does not see. The bride and groom go off to a little room where the table is set with some tea and cake, and the door is locked, and they're locked into that room together, and that symbolizes their actual marriage. So we've got two stages of marriage, betrothal and actual marriage. So this idea that the Gan Na'ul, the locked garden, is betrothal. And he explains this according to the famous concept, Kadshenu b'mitzvotecha, sanctify us with your mitzvot, v'tein chalkenu b'toratecha, and put our portion in your Torah. So that is a... Sorry, just one second. That's right. So this is quoted quite a number of times in Hasidic teachings with this kind of meaning, that we've got these two stages. Kadshenu b'mitzvotecha, betroth us with your mitzvot, and put our portion in your Torah, which is really the point of marriage, actual marriage. So kiddushin, betrothal, is a kind of invitation. It's not an invitation. Hasmana in this sense means designation. The woman who is being betrothed is being designated uniquely for her husband. And through this, she's forbidden to everyone else in the world. A woman cannot be betrothed to two different people. So if this man betroths the woman, she is uniquely betrothed to him and cannot be betrothed and cannot have a relationship with any other man. So that is the moment of betrothal, and that is kadshenu b'mitzvotecha, betroth us, sanctify us, and it's the same word, with your mitzvah. And then we have the next step. V'tein chalkenu b'toratecha, put our portion in your Torah, hu inyan hanisuin. That is the actual marriage. Now, what happens in actual marriage? Hamshacha b'pnimiyut. There is a flow which enters the inwardness of the person, so that the person receives. We receive the flow which comes from the divine until it becomes Cholkeinu, the Yisrael. It becomes our lot, our portion of the Jewish people. So that's what this phrase means. Sanctify us, this. Sanctify us with your commandments and put our portion in your Torah, that the flow which comes from the mitzvot is in some sense surrounding the person, like betrothal, you might say, like the ring on the finger, which is round, surrounds, and the effect of the person, the effect on the person who keeps the mitzvah is mainly that through the mitzvah, the person should be separated from negative desires and bad moral qualities and bad emotional qualities. So in other words, when we do mitzvot, these mitzvot should have a refining effect on us. The Midrash says that the mitzvot were given the tzarefet abriyot, to refine people, to make them more noble and more spiritual. So the idea here is that by doing the mitzvah, we get separated from negative desires and negative emotional qualities. B'dugmat kiddushin, like betrothal of a woman. And the fact that the woman is betrothed to her husband is mainly the fact, has the effect that she is forbidden to any other man. And that means, in terms of our relationship with the divine, betrothal to the divine through the mitzvah separates our power of love, our power of affection, that it is not going to go in inappropriate directions, and it's not going, and our emotions are not going to be expressed in inappropriate ways. So the idea is that if a person does mitzvah in a meaningful way, then that is something which refines the person all round. And through this, the person becomes a vessel. Nase kli liklot o haTorah. The person becomes a vessel to receive the radiance of the Torah. V'toratcha betoch meyai. Your Torah is within my innards, which is nisuin, which is marriage, the actual union of the person with the divine. Now, so we can understand the context of this. During the time, the days of counting the Omer that we're in now, that means counting the days in order to come close, intimately close with the divine on the festival of Shavuot, and that union with God through the giving of the Torah, that represents marriage. And it's as if the Torah, the Ten Commandments, are the marriage document, the Ketubah, and God and the Jewish people are there united forever. So, now the Rebbe comments. Now one can add, Shahadimyon the mitzvot v'torah le'erosim v'nitzuin, the idea of comparing mitzvot and Torah to betrothal and marriage. Now, erosin is another word for betrothal. So there's kiddushin and erosin. They mean the same thing. It means betrothal. Hu b'shnein yanim. There are two ways to understand that. Someone's asking something? No? Okay. At any time, if you want to make a comment or ask something, just unmute your phone and say. Now, first of all, let's understand this. There's the way in which the flow of from the mitzvah into the person who keeps the mitzvah is a surrounding flow, as we mentioned, of betrothal. The hamshacha of Torah that the person studies is inward, like marriage, as we've just said. So there's something surrounding and something internal. Now also in the flow itself, the hamshacha of Torah is a very exalted and inward kind of flow, more than the flow which comes from the mitzvot. Let me just check the footnote over here, it's footnote 17. And I just wanted to check what he said. Also it's a reference to the teachings of Rabbi Shneur Zalman. So much so, let's miss out the brackets, and therefore the flow of Torah is like the actual intimacy of marriage, the flow, the seminal drop which flows from the male to the female, which is like the essence of the man which is being transferred to his wife. And one can say that this too is hinted at in the phrase, v'sein v'ten chalkenu b'toratecha, put our portion in your Torah, that the word our portion means two things. The Torah becomes a portion of Israel, and also that it's a portion of God. So the portion of God, like the seminal drop, flows into the person. And when you grasp a portion of the essence, you are grasping the whole thing. So in other words, God gives himself a little bit of himself when we are learning Torah, like this moment, we are, with the help of God, learning Torah together. And the fact that we're learning Torah, this Torah emanates from the infinite, boundless infinity of the divine. And the fact that we grasp a little bit of this Torah teaching, it puts us into a connection with the divine completely, even though the divine on all levels is completely beyond our understanding. Nonetheless, we are here connecting with the divine in a very intimate way. In Tanya chapter 5, it discusses the incredibly close bond that is achieved through the fact of studying Torah. That the Torah is like grasping the person and the person's mind and their being, their soul, and the person is grasping the Torah, which has within it the infinite radiance of godliness. So it's an incredible intimate bond through studying Torah. Now that in fact points out the nature of Hasidic teaching is that in all, what might seem ordinary and everyday aspects of life and particularly of Jewish life, that there is a tremendous power and intensity concealed there. And what the Hasidic teaching does is a little bit opens our eyes to that quality within. And in fact, we have the word gal in this verse. Now there is a verse in Psalms, gal einai, open my eyes, reveal my eyes, and I will see wonders from your Torah. So a person might study Torah in the ordinary way, and then comes Hasidic teaching emphasizing something about the Torah that they're studying, or the very fact of studying Torah, as we're looking at here, these wonders become more apparent to us. Now, section Gimel. V'yesh lo hosif, and one can add another point. The fact that sanctify us with your commandments is an introduction to put your portion in your Torah. It's one of the reasons that before the going out of Egypt, there was a section that we read in the shul, in the synagogue, if we were there, or it should have been read. If we would have been in the synagogue. And that is actually something that Moses said to the Jewish people before they left Egypt, which is called Parshat HaChodesh. The chapter of, it begins, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem. This month of Nisan shall be for you the beginning of months. And that chapter has many mitzvot in it. Mitzvot, commands that were given to the Jewish people at that moment, and mitzvot which apply through the generations. Because it was with the going out of Egypt that actually began the idea of the giving of the Torah. The idea was there before, but the concept of the giving of the Torah really began with the going out of Egypt. And therefore, v'lachein, lifnei yitziat Mitzrayim, and therefore before going out of Egypt, Nitzavu b'chama mitzvot, they were commanded with a number of mitzvot. Shezeh haya hakdama la'inyan d'matan Torah she'itchil b'yitziat Mitzrayim. And that really is the introduction to the giving of the Torah, which began with the going out of Egypt. So that moment of going out of Egypt is immediately opening the door to the giving of the Torah on Shavuot. And the Rebbe explains here, after that they came to Marah, as described in the Torah, and there they were given more mitzvot, they were given a further 10 mitzvot. The Talmud discusses what those 10 are. They are the 7 Noahide laws, and also the 3 further mitzvot of Kibud Av V'Em, honoring one's parents, Shabbat, and the details of Jewish civil law. And in so that is a further step of preparation for the giving of the Torah. And even more generally, the Rebbe says, the fact that the Torah begins with the Bereshit. And now, why does it begin with Bereshit? Rashi explains, because God says, I am showing you my power to give you the inheritance of other nations. And so the inheritance of other nations is the land of Israel. So Rashi's explanation of the Torah beginning with the word Bereshit and the account of creation is that Rashi says, it could be, we would imagine, since the Torah is a book of laws, it could actually begin with that chapter that was mentioned before, this month should be for you the first of the months, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem. So why? It's because the Torah is a book of laws. Why does it begin with the account of creation? In order to tell us that the land of Israel belongs to the Jewish people. The people might say to the Jewish people, you are bandits. You've stolen a land which is not yours. That's what Rashi says in the 11th century. You are bandits. You have stolen a land which is not yours. But in fact, God says, no, the whole world belongs to me. And every land I give to whoever I please. And the land of Israel, it's true, was the possession of the Canaanites. But then I took it away from them and I gave it to the Jewish people. And it is the possession of the Jewish people. Now, why is this, how is this focus on the land of Israel so relevant to the theme of this discourse about mitzvah? Because, as the Rebbe says, ki ruban because most of the mitzvah, many of the mitzvah are connected with the land of Israel, all the agricultural laws, all the sacrificial offerings, all the laws about the temple, Shemitah, Yovel, and so on. These all relate to the land of Israel, And so therefore, right at the beginning of the Torah, it is an introduction to our keeping of mitzvah. So in other words, we've got altogether a sense of preparation for the mitzvot and ultimately for the giving of the Torah on Shavuot. V'yesh lomar, and one can suggest, says the Rebbe, that this is also one of the reasons by the idea that before the festival of Shavuot, which is the time of the giving of the Torah, there are some particular mitzvot. What are the mitzvot which lead up to Shavuot? First of all, the mitzvah of having the Pesach festival, eating matzah, everything that goes into that. The negative mitzvah of not having any chametz, any leaven. Then there's the mitzvah of counting the omer, that there is every single day, there's a mitzvah now to count the omer. And the same way, that every single day a person becomes na'aseh b'riyah chadasha, a person becomes a new being. God recreates the world every day, and each person is a new being. So the main study of Torah is after keeping various mitzvot. So that means day by day. We have various mitzvot, for example, the mitzvah of saying the Shema, and there's the mitzvah of putting on tefillin, and the mitzvah of prayer. So after that series of mitzvot, then the person studies Torah, so there's mitzvot and then Torah. And similarly, when we look at the calendar, first of all, we have the festival of Pesach. And the festival of Pesach is the birth of the Jewish people, which comes after keeping various mitzvot, which are specific to Pesach, like the mitzvot of the festival of Pesach and the counting of the Omer. And then comes Matan Torateinu, the time of the giving of our Torah. So we're all the time in this movement, this flow towards the divine, step by step by step, the steps of the different mitzvot, the different kinds of preparation, and then the union with the divine through the actual learning of the Torah and especially the giving of the Torah. Now the Rebbe returns to the discourse by Reb Shmuel, the Maharash. Now the Maharash continues in his discourse that just as in the betrothal shekidushei ish v'isha kipshutam, in the literal betrothal of a groom betrothing his bride, who al yedei shahaish noten la davar, it's by the man giving the bride something. Now the common custom nowadays, and for many years, is that the groom gives the bride a ring, and he puts the ring on her finger. In fact, he could give her anything. He could give her a watch, he could give her a piece of jewelry, he could give her even a coin, a small coin, or something worth a small coin. And shebo hi yechola liknot chayei nafsha, it has to be enough that she could buy a little bit of food with it that would sustain her. So that's what the actual halachic definition of betrothal is in the tractate Kiddushin. In the Talmud, which talks about betrothal, it discusses all kinds of possible gifts that a man might give a girl, and in that way betroth her. So, but the key thing about the gift is it has to be worth enough to sustain her. And so, and in simile, al derech zeh hu benageya, similarly, when we look at the relationship of God and the Jewish people, God sanctifies us with his commandments, and sh'al yedei kiyum ha-mitzvot, through us keeping the commandments, nimshach chayut la'adam sh'mekayem ha-mitzvot. Life force comes to the person who's keeping the mitzvot. It's not just a matter that we are keeping mitzvot, inscrutable mitzvot that God has given us. In fact, the mitzvot that God gives us help us, and they give us life, and they give us positive things, like the mezuzah on the door has a protective quality for the home. That's part of the effect of that mitzvah. Although the mezuzah in itself, as the Rambam writes, it's to remind us of the oneness of God. When we see it on the door, we should think about the divine, but it also has a protective effect. And similarly, many or all of the mitzvot, and it says about all the mitzvot, asher yaseh otam adam, the mitzvot that a person carries out, v'chai behem, and he lives or she lives through them. When we carry out the mitzvot, they give us life. V'hagam shamitzvot heim rotzon ha'elyon. And even though the mitzvot are the upper will of the divine, and the will of the divine, the ratzon v'chinat sovev, the will of the divine is something transcendent. That in itself, it's completely beyond the world. Nonetheless, from that transcendent radiance comes life force to the man or woman who are keeping the mitzvot. And it's a life force which goes into the inwardness of the person. And we can also understand from the fact that the radiance which is drawn by the mitzvot, po'el, it has an effect not only on a person's thought and speech and action, but also on one's emotions, one's ethical qualities, and one's will. Which direction does one focus one's will, one's desire? Which direction is one's ta'anug, one's delight? As was explained earlier on, that through the mitzvot, a person becomes separated from negative desires and negative emotional qualities. So in other words, that by doing the mitzvah, we are being granted something from the divine. We're being granted tangible physical life force, and we're also being granted a spiritual aura, as it were, which affects our thinking and affects our feelings and affects our desires and what we find pleasurable and what we find funny and what we find interesting. It's all affected by the way we keep the mitzvah. And now returning to the interpretation of this verse in the Song of Songs, that the idea that the Jewish people lock themselves through the mitzvah in such a way, we lock ourselves up that our only delight is in godliness. However, all this, which sounds so very profound and far-reaching, is in the external aspect of the heart, and it hasn't yet entered the inwardness of the heart, and therefore we're only called betrothed, we're engaged, we haven't yet got married. So it's a very striking thing, this very intimate description of the effect of the mitzvot on a person, which really change our ethical and spiritual quality. But nonetheless, at this point, this is only the external step, like the groom putting the ring on the bride's finger. If, God forbid, in the middle of the wedding, the groom put the ring on the bride's finger and there was a fire alarm or an air raid attack or something like that, and everyone scattered, that bride and groom are not yet married. The bride cannot marry anyone else. She is connected with the husband. So they are connected together in an important way, but they cannot actually live together until they go through the second part of the ceremony. And in fact, in former times, hundreds of years ago, the two ceremonies would be separate. And now we have them together. But she's only called engaged betrothed at this point. And so the mitzvot, even though the discourse has described the mitzvot in such a profound way, nonetheless, this is only betrothed. Now, and according to this, Yesh levai perush ha-targum. Now we can come to the comment of the Targum, Targum Yonatan, Shegan na'ul ka'e al gan Eden, that this locked garden means the Garden of Eden. The only ones who can enter the Garden of Eden are the souls of the righteous. Because the idea of the Jew reserving himself or herself only for God, that even his delight or her delight should be only in godliness, is through drawing down an upper radiance through the keeping of mitzvah. And therefore the parable for this, the image for this, is the Garden of Eden. The ta'anug eloki, the divine delight, comes from above. Now, in terms of the logical discussion that this discourse is having, he asks, why does there have to be the comparison with the Garden of Eden? Isn't it enough to have the comparison with an ordinary garden which is locked and it's reserved for its owner, and the Jewish people are like the garden and the owner is God? So why does there have to be the additional image of Targum Yonatan saying it's not just an ordinary garden, it's the Garden of Eden? And the way that I understand the answer here is that in fact what the Garden of Eden represents is divine delight. And it's this divine delight which is bequeathed to the Jewish people by the first stage of our relationship with God in the keeping of mitzvot, the betrothal aspect of our relationship. And that is what bonds us to God in this initial way of betrothal. And so this is the basis to understand what is meant by Kadshenu b'mitzvotecha, that by the fact that we keep the mitzvah, we are illuminated, we are sanctified, we are spiritualized. It has an incredible effect on us. So the image of an ordinary garden wouldn't be enough. It has to be the Garden of Eden. Rabbi Shmuel, would you agree with that way of presenting it?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. So now in section A. Ube'omek yoter, going a little bit deeper. Yesh lome b'hakdima b'yo b'zeh sh'marich b'mayma. Now we go into the explanation which Reb Shmuel, Rebbe Marash, expresses in 1880 in his discourse about the Tein Chokeinu b'Toratecha, put our portion in your Torah, which is like the idea of marriage. Now, first sight, first, this discourse explains that the locked garden is the idea of sanctify us with your commandments. So now, how exactly does it fit the idea of put our portion in your Torah? Where is that in the verse? So we could say that that is what is the next words in the verse, Gal Na'ul, a locked fountain, as that translation, right? So we had a locked garden, Gan Na'ul, and then a locked fountain, Gal Na'ul, which is the continuation of the verse. And the Midrash says, Gan Na'ul, that when we say a locked garden, that means the virgins. Gal Na'ul, the locked fountain, that means the woman who is married. And so she is now married, she is fully in relation with her husband. And so that is the higher dimension. So the locked garden is the virgin who is betrothed but not yet married. And then the locked fountain is the next stage when she is married and now she's truly united with her husband. And the Tzemach Tzedek explained in a discourse by the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, that the locked garden is the betrothal and the locked fountain is marriage. And now there's a further point here, and I mentioned before the verse Gal einai, open my eyes. You see, this is also the word gal. The word gal has many different meanings, and it can mean a wave, a fountain, a flow. It can mean reveal. Gal einai, open my eyes, va'abita niflaot mitoratecha, and I will see wonders from your Torah. Because the main idea of the marriage with the divine, yiyela atid lavo, will be in the future. Because then will be the gilui, the revelation of the inwardness of Torah in an incredible way. It's true that we have, thank God, the revelation of inwardness of Torah now, which we are now have the good fortune to be studying together, Baruch Hashem, in several different countries, continents even. The real revelation of the inwardness of Torah will be in the time of Mashiach. And that is a phenomenal thing. So, since this maimer, this discourse of the Rebbe Maharash of 1880 is only speaking about the first stage, the locked garden, and in fact, the explanation of the next stage, the locked fountain, is only in the next discourse. You see, the Rebbe Maharash, the Shmuel, he created what is called a Hemshech of Mamorim, a stream of discourses, which could go on for months or even years, where each discourse is an elaboration of the discourse before, and week by week he would say a discourse and continuing further and further the same theme, even though very often the beginning and the end of each individual discourse relates, for example, to the Sedra of that week. So he would ask us a question about the Sedra and then go into a long explanation which relates to last week's discourse and to next week's discourse. And then at the end of this week's discourse, he would conclude by showing how the answer to the question has been resolved. So in the discourses of Reb Shmuel, of the Rebbe Maharash, he has one discourse which is about Gan Na'ul, a locked garden, and then the next week's discourse, then the following discourse, is about the locked fountain. But in fact, in this discourse already, he talks about Katshenu b'mitzvatech b'toratech, Tein chalkenu b'toratecha, give your portion, our portion in your Torah. So that makes it clear. What is being revealed, explained in this discourse about put our portion in your Torah is, ki al yedei zeh, that it's through this that we understand more what is meant by the locked garden. That the fact of the service of the locked garden, which is sanctifying us with your commandments, we come to the relationship with God, the more inward, inner relationship, the intimate relationship of putting our portion in your Torah. Klita bepnimiyut. Klita means actual absorption, like Mishada Klita in Israel, the ministry of absorption, how the immigrants can be absorbed into the country. So this klita, this absorbing in inwardness, godliness, through study and internalization of Torah. And that is because the flow of the mitzvah, through which comes the betrothal, is in such a way as v'chai bahem, live with the mitzvot, v'chayut pnimiyut, with an inner life force. So in other words, when we keep the mitzvah, it gives us life, and the life force is an inner life force. It's something within us in an incredible way. And the gilui of inyan zeh, now the revelation of that flow that comes from the mitzvah to us, is when we actually have the next stage of marriage, of true intimate bonding with the divine through our study of Torah and our portion being in God's Torah. V'zehu, and that is Gan Na'ul, that is the locked garden, and the Gal Na'ul, and the locked fountain. The Gan Na'ul Yavodah Dekiyum HaMitzvah. The locked garden means the service of keeping mitzvah. The Gal Na'ul and the locked fountain, who are Esek B'Torah, is study of Torah, U'Bifrat B'Pnimiyot Torah, and especially the spiritual dimension of Torah, the inner dimension. U'Shtei Avodot Tzichot Liyot. Now, both these types of service of God have to be Be'ofen D'Melechatchila Ariba. Now, Melechatchila Ariba is a concept that particularly relates to the fourth Lubavitch Rebbe, Rav Shmuel the Maharash. He would say, the world says, let's say there is some kind of obstacle. The world says, if you can't go under the obstacle, then go over the obstacle, exert more effort and go over it. But I say, from the beginning, go over it. In other words, go straight, full out, the full throttle straight away. Use all your energy, try for the highest, reach for the infinite, reach for the highest level. And that is the teaching of Rav Shmuel, whose birthday is going to be on this coming Sunday, the 2nd of Iyar. And a birthday in Chabad thought is a very significant concept for each of us. A birthday and a birthday of a Rebbe is something which imparts something to us. So he imparts to us this idea of not being limited by the present and not being limited by apparent obstacles and going way beyond and achieving and seeking to achieve much higher goals. And similar, there is the idea of Yeichu Michael El Choyl, going from one level to another, from the level of being betrothed, the locked garden, to the level of marriage, the locked fountain. And the movement and the ascent has to be in such a way of lechatchila riba, of this tremendous leap beyond all obstacles. And this is with an arousal from below and the response from above. And also the flow and the revelation from above, from the divine. You see, this is the basic Zohar concept, that the relationship between God and the Jewish people is like a male and a female, and the arousal from below, from the Jewish people to God, and there is the arousal from God towards us. Sometimes we speak of the arousal from God coming to us first, and that then arouses us. And that causes a more intense arousal from the divine. So all this comes through these steps of service of God, of mitzvot and study of Torah and everything that entails, and the transformation, the inner personal transformations that these entail. They should all be mlechatchila ariba, in such a way of going beyond all limitations. She'al yedei avodot enu, and through this tiyeh alachatchila ariba, we should reach that going beyond limitations, also compared to the lechatchila ariba of the service of man. The service of man can go beyond limitations up to a certain point. The divine response goes beyond all limitations on another level of infinity. And in addition to the idea that this service is in a way of yagati, if we make the effort, one of the concepts that the Rebbe taught children to understand, the idea of yagati, if I've made the effort, umatzati, I found tamin, that's something genuine. And finding, as a result of effort, this finding is not proportional to the effort. We make the effort, but what we find, what we achieve through the effort, is completely on another level, a higher level. Because mitzia, something that you find, comes behesach hadat, something that one finds comes without realizing what one is finding at that moment, and you find it, and it's a wonderful thing, and that finding itself is in a way of lechatchila ariba. So this idea of whatever our concept of our relationship with the divine and our relationship with mitzvot and our relationship with Torah, it's as if the Rebbe is asking us, in terms of our keeping of mitzvot, let's make a little step forward. Let's make a jump forward. And similarly with our study of Torah, let's make a jump forward. Yehi Rotson, says the Rebbe, this is a prayer at the end of the discourse. May it be the will of God. Shal yedea dibur bin yanim elu, by speaking about these things. Ubifchat al yedei ha'avodah bazeh, and especially through the service, the effort that we make in this. Nizke bekarov, we should have the zchut, the merit, very soon, mamash, ligula tida, to the future redemption, the present redemption with the help of God. And then will be the shleimut of sanctify us with your commandments and put our portion in your Torah, the wholeness of the mitzvot, which we will fulfill the mitzvot there in the land of Israel, in the temple, and the wholeness of Torah, the new Torah, which will come from God and be taught by Mashiach. And all this will be in such a way that God did not hold them back even for an eye blink. And this itself will be in a way of lechatchila a riba, that we will not delay at all, everything at full throttle, reaching for the infinite and gaining the infinite here, now, mamash, mamash. Right.
Yeah.
Any comments from anyone?
I had three questions. I don't know if that's too many, but the first one was, when you were saying about going over and under, I didn't quite follow. Is it possible to repeat that?
Let's imagine that there is a barrier. There's a barrier of some kind, right? So how are you going to get through this barrier? So the barrier, there might be a space underneath the barrier. So you're going to crawl underneath the barrier. But that might not work. There may not be enough space. So you say, you know what? I'm going to jump over the barrier. So what the Rebbe Marash is saying is, the world says, it's a common saying, if you can't get under, so then you go over. This is probably a Yiddish saying, like a wise wise Yiddish saying. And the Rebbe Marash adapted it. He said, you know what? But I say, l'chatchila, Rebbe, you start off going over the barrier. Don't do things by halves. Do everything in the most gigantic way. I remember once a certain shliach, an emissary, was asking the Rebbe something about what kind of building to get, you know, for his wherever he was in his shliachut, in his local place. So there was a choice of a little building or a much bigger building, but he didn't seem to have enough people to fill the little building yet. He was only getting small groups of people to his study circle and his minyan. So the Rebbe said to him, "L'chatchila, Rebbe, go full strength, get the big building, you'll soon fill it up. It's go full throttle." The first letter that I was zoched to receive from the Rebbe had this phrase, "L'chatchila, Rebbe." So it's a very, very significant concept.
Thank you for explaining that. The second question was, the klita absorption, is that an opposite idea to the klipa?
That's an interesting idea. I've never seen that actually juxtaposed. It's true, it's one letter different, klita and klipa. Rabbi Lu, have you ever seen klita and klipa, one being the opposite of the other?
Klita and klipa. It's an interesting point.
Yeah. Eve?
So the third one. You said there isn't an English word for
nimshal.
Could it be purpose or translation? Would any of them suit the meaning?
you see, you have a complex idea, and then you have a parable or a mashal, a model, to use a kind of mathematical term, a model which explains to you this complex reality. So there's reality behind the parable. So reality is the words for this nimshal, but I've never found a neat English expression. It's, so I was wondering if Eve could think of one.
There's one in poetry. There's one for poetry, tenor and vehicle.
What's it called?
Tenor is the nimshal and vehicle is the mashal.
Oh, wonderful. How do you spell the word tenor?
T-E-N-O-R.
Tenor and vehicle. How interesting. Well, that's a very precise concept.
Except it probably sheds a lot of darkness for most people hearing those words.
Yeah, it's a shame that they're not more in common currency.
Right.
Because that's a very useful concept. Thank you. I thought you would know a word. All right, well, it's been very wonderful studying with you. And I hope this recording has worked. It does say that it's recording. And I wish everyone well in every way and be careful. And with the help of Hashem, we meet next Tuesday evening. Hopefully it will be the same login number and everything will be the same. This is now a dedicated thing for this group. So I will send out the email with the information, but it will be the same as it was for this evening.
Is it too late just to ask another point? When you were saying about the under and over and going full throttle, is there an element of going against the grain, going against the perceived wisdom?
That could well be. Yes, that could well be. You know, the perceived wisdom, or received wisdom, very often puts limitations on what people do. And the inspiration of Hasidic teachings is to go beyond those limitations, change the paradigm. Okay.
Can I ask about the locked garden?
Yes.
The locked garden and the locked fountain. I mean, both elements taken with the idea of the Garden of Eden has elements of what is forbidden, what is not accessible. So does one understand that in order to unlock these things, maybe this is a bit simplistic, I'm going to say, the idea of unlocking this possibly means the effort that one has to make rather than the sense of it being forbidden.
I think that's a very good point. That the fact that it's locked means that there's effort. There's effort on our part. See, in a sense, in the image, in the parable, in the vehicle, we are locking the garden so that it should only be open to the right owner of the garden, to God. And that is our effort. We make that effort to lock the garden. So the way in which we make that effort is by keeping on a straight path. To me, the image of driving relates to this concept. You're driving on a straight path to somewhere you want to reach. Now you have to be very careful not to veer off the road. You can't look in this direction or that direction. You have to focus on what you are trying to achieve. And so in that sense, the locked garden means a sense of focus, the inner focus of the person on the divine and finding the divine in our lives and in all aspects of our lives, finding the divine dimension which is there. And focusing on that.
Could one say it's reserved? So it's a reserved garden or reserved...
Yes, I think reserved is a very good term for that. Well, this has been a very linguistic session. So I wish everyone a very good evening, and thank you very much for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.